Another bath? Egg said, dismayed. You washed yesterday. And then I spent a day in armor, swimming in my sweat. Close your lips and fill the kettle. You washed the night Sir Eustace took us into service, Egg pointed out. And last night, and now. That's three times, sir. I need to treat with a high-born lady. Do you want me to turn up before her high seat smelling like Sir Bennis? You would have to roll in a tub of maester's droppings to smell as bad as that, sir. Egg filled the kettle. Sam Stoop says the castellan at Coldmoat is as big as you are. Lucas Inchfield is his name, but he's called the Long Inch for his size. Do you think he's as big as you are, sir? No. It had been years since Duncan met anyone as tall as he was. He took the kettle and hung it above the fire. Will you fight him? No. Dunk almost wished it had been otherwise. He might not be the greatest fighter in the realm, but size and strength could make up for many lacks. Not for a lack of wits, though. He was no good with words, and worse with women. This giant, Lucas Longinch, did not daunt him half so much as the prospect of facing the Red Widow. I'm going to talk to Red Widow, that's all. What will you tell her, sir? That she has to take the dam down. You must take down your dam, lady, or else. Ask her to take down the dam, I mean. Please, give back our checky water. If it pleases her. A little water, m'lady, if it please you. Sir Eustace would not want him to beg. How do I say it, then? The water soon began to steam and bubble. Help me lug this to the tub, Dunk told the boy. Together they lifted the kettle from the hearth and crossed the cellar to the big wooden tub. I don't know how to talk with high-born ladies, he confessed as they were pouring. We both might have been killed in Dawn on account of what I said to Lady Vaith. Lady Vaith was mad, Egg reminded him. But you could have been more gallant. Ladies like it when you're gallant. If you were to rescue the Red Widow the way you rescued that puppet girl from Arion. Arion's in Lys, and the Widow's not in want of rescuing. He did not want to talk of Tansel. Tansel Too Tall was her name, but she was not too tall for me. Well, the boy said, some knights sing gallant songs to their ladies, or play them tunes upon a lute. I have no lute. Dunk looked morose. And that night I drank too much in the Planky Town. You told me I sang like an ox in a mud wallow. I had forgotten, sir. How could you forget? You told me to forget, sir, said Egg, all innocence. You told me I'd get a clout in the ear the next time I mentioned it. There will be no singing. Even if he had the voice for it, the only song Dunk knew all the way through was The Bear and the Maiden Fair. He doubted that would do much to win over Lady Webber. The kettle was steaming once again. They wrestled it over to the tub and upended it. Egg drew water to fill it for the third time, then clambered back onto the well. You'd best not take any food or drink at Coldmoat, sir. The Red Widow poisoned all her husbands. I'm not like to marry her. She's a high-born lady, and I'm Dunk of Flea Bottom, remember? He frowned. Just how many husbands has she had, do you know? Four, said Egg, but no children. Whenever she gives birth, a demon comes by night to carry off the issue. Sam Stoop's wife says she sold her babes unborn to the Lord of the Seven Hells, so he'd teach her his black arts. High-born ladies don't meddle with the black arts. They dance and sing and do embroidery. Maybe she dances with demons and embroiders evil spells, Egg said with relish. And how would you know what high-born ladies do, sir? Lady Vaith is the only one you ever knew. That was insolent, but true. Might be I don't know any high-born ladies, but I know a boy who's asking for a good clout in the ear. Dunk rubbed the back of his neck. A day in chainmail always left it hard as wood. You've known queens and princesses. Did they dance with demons and practice the black arts? Lady Shearer does. Lord Bloodraven's paramour. She bathes in blood to keep her beauty. And once my sister Ray put a love potion in my drink so I'd marry her instead of my sister, Dela. Egg spoke as if such incest was the most natural thing in the world. For him it is. The Targaryens had been marrying brother to sister for hundreds of years to keep the blood of the dragon pure. Though the last actual dragon had died before Dunk was born, the dragon kings went on. Maybe the gods don't mind them marrying their sisters. Did the potion work? Dunk asked. It would have, said Egg, but I spit it out. I don't want a wife. I want to be a knight of the king's guard, and live only to serve and defend the king. The king's guard are sworn not to wed. That's a noble thing, but when you're older, you may find you'd sooner have a girl than a white cloak. Dunk was thinking of Tansel Too Tall and the way she'd smiled at him at Ashford. Sir Eustace said I was the sort of man he'd hoped to have his daughter wed. Her name was Alison.
She's dead, sir.
I know she's dead, said Dunk, annoyed. If she was alive, he said, if she was, he'd like her to marry me. Or someone like me. I never had a lord offer me his daughter before.
His dead daughter?
And the Osgraves might have been lords in the old days, but Sir Eustace is only a landed knight. I know what he is. Do you want a clout in the ear?
Well, said Egg, I'd sooner have a clout than a wife. Especially a dead wife, sir. The kettle's steaming.
They carried the water to the tub, and Dunk pulled his tunic over his head. I will wear my Dornish tunic to Coldmoat. It was sand silk, the finest garment that he owned, painted with his elm and falling star. If you wear it for the ride, it will get all sweaty, sir, Egg said. Wear the one you wore today. I'll bring the other, and you can change when you reach the castle.
Before I reach the castle, I'd look a fool, changing clothes on the drawbridge.
And who said you were coming with me?
A knight is more impressive with a squire in attendance.
That was true. The boy had a good sense of such things. He should. He served 2 years as a page at King's Landing. Even so, Dunk was reluctant to take him into danger. He had no notion what sort of welcome awaited him at Coldmoat. If this Red Widow was as dangerous as they said, he could end up in a crow cage like those 2 men they had seen upon the road.
You will stay and help Bennis with the small folk, he told Egg, and don't give me that sullen look.
He kicked his breeches off and climbed into the tub of steaming water.
Go on, and get to sleep now, and let me have my bath. You're not going, and that's the end of it.
Egg was up and gone when Dunk awoke, with the light of the morning sun in his face. Gods be good, how can it be so hot so soon? He sat up and stretched, yawning, then climbed to his feet and stumbled sleepily down to the well, where he lit a fat tallow candle, splashed some cold water on his face, and dressed. When he stepped out into the sunlight, Thunder was waiting by the stable, saddled and bridled. Egg was waiting too, with Maester, his mule. The boy had put his boots on. For once he looked a proper squire, in a handsome doublet of green and gold checks and a pair of tight white woollen breeches. The breeches were torn in the seat, but Sam Stoop's wife sewed them up for me, he announced.
The clothes were Adam's, said Sir Eustace, as he led his own grey gelding from his stall.
A checky lion adorned the frayed silk cloak that flowed from the old man's shoulders.
The doublet is a trifle musty from the trunk, but it should serve. A knight is more impressive with a squire in attendance, so I have decided that Egg should accompany you to Coldmoat.
Outwitted by a boy of 10. Dunk looked at Egg and silently mouthed the words, clout in the ear. The boy grinned.
I have something for you as well, Sir Duncan. Come.
Sir Eustace produced a cloak and shook it out with a flourish. It was white wool, bordered with squares of green satin and cloth of gold. A woolen cloak was the last thing he needed in such heat, but when Sir Eustace draped it about his shoulders, Dunk saw the pride on his face and found himself unable to refuse.
Thank you, my lord. It suits you well. Would that I could give you more.
The old man's moustache twitched.
I sent Sam Stoops down into the cellar to search through my son's things, but Edwin and Harold were smaller men, thinner in the chest and much shorter in the leg. None of what they left would fit you, sad to say.
The cloak is enough, my lord. I won't shame it.
I do not doubt that. He gave his horse a pat. I thought I'd ride with you part of the way, if you have no objection.
None, my lord. Egg led them down the hill, sitting tall on Maester.
Must he wear that floppy straw hat? Sir Eustace asked Dunk.
He looks a bit foolish, don't you think?
Not so foolish as when his head is peeling, my lord.
Even at this hour, with the sun barely above the horizon, it was hot. By afternoon, the saddles will be hot enough to raise blisters. Egg might look elegant in the dead boy's finery, but he would be a boiled egg by nightfall. Dunk at least could change. He had his good tunic in his saddlebag, and his old green one on his back.
"'We'll take the west way,' Sir Eustace announced. "'It is little used these past years, "'but still the shortest way from Standfast to Coldmoat Castle.' "'The path took them around back of the hill, "'past the graves where the old knight had laid his wife and sons to rest "'in a thicket of blackberry bushes. "'They loved to pick the berries here, my boys. "'When they were little, they would come to me with sticky faces "'and scratches on their arms, and I'd know just where they'd been.' "'He smiled fondly. "'Your egg reminds me of my Adam. "'A brave boy for one so young. "'Adam was trying to protect his wounded brother Harold "'when the battle washed over them. "'A riverman with six acorns on his shield "'took his arm off with an axe. "'His sad grey eyes found Dunk's. "'This old master of yours, the Knight of Penny Tree, "'did he fight in the Blackfyre Rebellion?' "'He did, my lord, before he took me on.' Dunk had been no more than three or four at the time, running half-naked through the alleys of Flea Bottom, more animal than boy. Was it for the Red Dragon, or the Black? Red or Black was a dangerous question, even now. Since the days of Aegon the Conqueror, the arms of House Targaryen had borne a three-headed dragon, red on black. Daemon the Pretender had reversed those colours on his own banners, as many bastards did. "'Sir Eustace is my liege lord,' Dunk reminded himself. "'He has a right to ask.' "'He fought beneath Lord Hayford's banner, my lord. "'Green fretty over gold? A green pale wavy?' "'It might be, my lord. Egg would know. "'The lad could recite the arms of half the knights in Westeros. "'Lord Hayford was a noted loyalist. "'King Darren made him his hand just before the battle.' Butterwell had done such a dismal job that many questioned his loyalty, but Lord Hayford had been stalwart from the first. Sir Arlen was beside him when he fell. A lord with three castles on his shield cut him down. Many good men fell that day, on both sides. The grass was not red before the battle. Did your Sir Arlen tell you that? Sir Arlen never liked to speak about the battle. His squire died there too. Roger of Pennytree was his name, Sir Arlen's sister's son. Even saying the name made Dunk feel vaguely guilty. I stole his place. Only princes and great lords had the means to keep two squires. If Aegon the Unworthy had given his sword to his heir, Daeron, instead of his bastard Daemon, there might never have been a Blackfyre Rebellion, and Roger of Pennytree might be alive today. He would be a knight someplace, a truer knight than me. I would have ended on the gallows, or been sent off to the Night's Watch to walk the wall until I died. A great battle is a terrible thing, the old knight said, but in the midst of blood and carnage there is sometimes also beauty, beauty that could break your heart. I will never forget the way the sun looked when it set upon the red grass field. 10,000 men had died, and the air was thick with moans and lamentations, but above us the sky turned gold and red and orange, so beautiful it made me weep to know that my sons would never see it. He sighed. It was a closer thing than they would have you believe these days, if not for Bloodraven. I'd always heard that it was Baylor Breakspear who won the battle, said Dunk. Him and Prince Maker. The hammer and the anvil. The old man's moustache gave a twitch. The singers leave out much and more. Daemon was the warrior himself that day. No man could stand before him. He broke Lord Aerin's van to pieces and slew the Knight of Nine Stars and Wild Will Wainwood before coming up against Sir Gawain Corbray of the King's Guard. For near an hour they danced together on their horses, wheeling and circling and slashing as men died all around them. It said that whenever Blackfyre and Lady Forlorn clashed, you could hear the sound for a league around. It was half a song and half a scream, they say. But when at last the lady faltered, Blackfyre clove through Sir Gawain's helm and left him blind and bleeding. Daemon dismounted to see that his fallen foe was not trampled and commanded Red Tusk to carry him back to the maesters in the rear. And there was his mortal error, for the raven's teeth had gained the top of Weeping Ridge, and Bloodraven saw half his brother's royal standard 300 yards away, and Daemon and his sons beneath it. He slew Aegon first, the elder of the twins, for he knew that Daemon would never leave the boy whilst warmth lingered in his body, though white shafts fell like rain. Nor did he, though 7 arrows pierced him, driven as much by sorcery as by Bloodraven's bow. Young Aemon took up black fire when the blade slipped from his dying father's fingers, so Bloodraven slew him too, the younger of the twins. Thus perished the black dragon and his sons. There was much and more afterward, I know. I saw a bit of it myself, the rebels running, Bitter Steel turning the rout and leading his mad charge, his battle with Bloodraven second only to the one Daemon fought with Gawain Corbray. Prince Baylor's hammer blow against the rebel rear, the Dornish men all screaming as they filled the air with spears. But at the end of the day it made no matter. The war was done when Daemon died. So close a thing. If Daemon had ridden over Gawain Corbray and left him to his fate, he might have broken Maekar's left before Bloodraven could take the ridge. The day would have belonged to the Black Dragons then, with the hand slain and the road to King's Landing open before them. Daemon might have been sitting on the Iron Throne by the time Prince Baylor could come up with his Storm Lords and his Dornish men. The singers can go on about their hammer and their anvil, sir, but it was the Kinslayer who turned the tide with a white arrow and a black spell. He rules us now as well, make no mistake. King Aerys is his creature. It would not surprise to learn that Bloodraven had ensorcelled his grace to bend him to his will. Small wonder we are cursed. Sir Eustace shook his head and lapsed into a brooding silence. Dunk wondered how much Egg had overheard, but there was no way to ask him. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have, he thought. Already the day was growing hotter. Even the flies have fled, Dunk noted. Flies have better sense than knights. They stay out of the sun. He wondered whether he and Egg would be offered hospitality at Coldmoat. A tankard of cool brown ale would go down well. Dunk was considering that prospect with pleasure when he remembered what Egg had said about the Red Widow poisoning her husband's. His thirst fled at once. There were worse things than dry throats. There was a time when House Osgray held all the lands for many leagues around, from Nunney in the east to Cobble Cover, Sir Eustace said. Coldmoat was ours, and the Horseshoe Hills, the caves at Derring Downs, the villages of Dosk and Little Dosk and Brandy Bottom, both sides of Leafy Lake. Osgray maids wed Florence, Swans and Tarbecks, even High Towers and Blackwoods. The edge of Watts Wood had come in sight. Dunk shielded his eyes with one hand and squinted at the greenery. For once he envied Egg his floppy hat. At least we'll have some shade. Watts Wood once extended all the way to Coldmoat, Sir Eustace said. I do not recall who Watt was. Before the conquest, you could find aurochs in his wood, though, and great elks of 20 hands and more. There were more red deer than any man could take in a lifetime, for none but the king and the Checky Lion were allowed to hunt here. Even in my father's day there were trees on both sides of the stream. But the spiders cleared the woods away to make pasture for their cows and sheep and horses. A thin finger of sweat crept down Dunk's chest. He found himself wishing devoutly that his liege lord would keep quiet. It is too hot for talk. It is too hot for riding. It is just too bloody hot. In the woods they came upon the carcass of a great brown tree cat crawling with maggots. Ew, Egg said, as he walked maester wide around it. That stinks worse than Sir Benis. Sir Eustace reined up. A tree cat? I had not known there were any left in this wood. I wonder what killed him. When no one answered, he said, I will turn back here. Just continue on the west way, and it will take you straight to Coldmoat. You have the coin? Dunk nodded. Good. Come home with my water, sir. The old knight trotted off back the way they'd come. When he was gone, Egg said, I thought how you should speak to Lady Webber, sir. You should win her to your side with gallant compliments. The boy looked as cool and crisp in his checky tunic as Sir Eustace had in his cloak. Am I the only one who sweats? Gallant compliments, Dunk echoed. What sort of gallant compliments? You know, sir, tell her how fair and beautiful she is. Dunk had doubts. She's outlived 4 husbands. She must be as old as Lady Vaith. If I say she's fair and beautiful when she's old and warty, she will take me for a liar. You just need to find something true to say about her.
That's what my brother Darren does. Even ugly old whores can have nice hair, or well-shaped ears, he says.
Well-shaped ears? Dunk's doubts were growing.
Or pretty eyes. Tell her that her gown brings out the colour of her eyes.
The lad reflected for a moment.
Unless she only has the one eye, like Lord Bloodraven.
My lady, that gown brings out the colour of your eye.
Dunk had heard knights and lordlings mouth such gallantries at other ladies. They never put it quite so baldly, though.
Good lady, that gown is beautiful. It brings out the colour of both your lovely eyes.
Some of the ladies have been old and scrawny, or fat and florid, or pox-scarred and homely, but all wore gowns and had two eyes, and, as Dunk recalled, they'd been well pleased by the flowery words.
What a lovely gown, my lady! It brings out the lovely beauty of your beautiful coloured eyes.
A hedge knight's life is simpler, Dunk said glumly. If I say the wrong thing, she's like to sew me in a sack of rocks and throw me in her moat.
I doubt she'll have that big a sack, sir, said Egg. We could use my boot instead.
No, Dunk growled, we couldn't.
When they emerged from Watts Wood, they found themselves well upstream of the dam. The waters had risen high enough for Dunk to take that soak he dreamed of. Deep enough to drown a man, he thought. On the far side, the bank had been cut through, and a ditch dug to divert some of the flow westward. The ditch ran along the road, feeding a myriad of smaller channels that snaked off through the fields. Once we cross the stream, we are in the widow's power. Dunk wondered what he was riding into. He was only one man, with a boy of 10 to guard his back.
Egg fanned his face.
Sir? Why are we stopped?
We're not. Dunk gave his mount his heels and splashed down into the stream. Egg followed on the mule.
The water rose as high as Thunder's belly before it began to fall again. They emerged, dripping on the widow's side. Ahead, the ditch ran straight as a spear, shining green and golden in the sun.
When they spied the towers of Coldmoat several hours later, Dunk stopped to change to his good Dornish tunic and loosen his long sword in its scabbard. He did not want the blade sticking should he need to pull it free.
Egg gave his dagger's hilt a shake as well, his face solemn beneath his floppy hat. They rode on side by side, Dunk on the big destrier, the boy upon his mule, the Osgrey banner flapping listlessly from its staff.
Coldmoat came as somewhat of a disappointment, after all that Sir Eustace had said of it. Compared to Storm's End, or Highgarden, and other lordly seats that Dunk had seen, it was a modest castle. But it was a castle, not a fortified watchtower. Its crenellated outer walls stood 30 feet high, with towers at each corner, each one half again the size of Standfast. From every turret and spire, the black banners of Webber hung heavy, each emblazoned with a spotted spider upon a silvery web.
"Sir," Egg said, "the water. Look where it goes."
The ditch ended under Coldmoat's eastern walls, spilling down into the moat from which the castle took its name. The gurgle of the falling water made Dunk grind his teeth.
She will not have my checky water.
Come, he said to Egg. Over the arch of the main gate, a row of spider banners drooped in the still air, above the older sigil carved deep into the stone. Centuries of wind and weather had worn it down, but the shape of it was still distinct, a rampant lion made of checkered squares. The gates beneath were open. As they clattered across the drawbridge, Dunk made note of how low the moat had fallen. 6 feet, at least, he judged. Two spearmen barred their way at the portcullis. One had a big black beard, and one did not. The beard demanded to know their purpose here.
"My Lord of Osgrey sent me to treat with Lady Webber," Dunk told him. "I am called Sir Duncan, the Tall."
"Well, I knew you wasn't Bennis," said the beardless guard. "We would have smelled him coming."
He had a missing tooth and a spotted spider badge sewn above his heart.
The beard was squinting suspiciously at Dunk.
"No one sees a ladyship unless the long inch gives his leave. You come with me. Your stable boy can stay with the horses."
"I'm a squire, not a stable boy," Egg insisted.
"Are you blind or only stupid?"
The beardless guard broke into laughter. The beard put the point of his spear to the boy's throat.
"Say that again."
Dunk gave Egg a clout in the ear.
"No, shut your mouth and tend the horses."
He dismounted.
"I'll see Sir Lucas now."
The beard lowered his spear.
"He's in the yard."
They passed beneath a spiked iron portcullis and under a murder hole before emerging in the outer ward. Hounds were barking in the kennels, and Dunk could hear singing coming from the leaded glass windows of a seven-sided wooden sept. In front of the smithy, a blacksmith was shoeing a warhorse, with a prentice boy assisting. Nearby, a squire was loosing shafts at the archery butts, while a freckled girl with a long braid matched him shot for shot. The quintain was spinning, too, as half a dozen knights in quilted padding took their turns knocking it around. They found Sir Lucas Longinch among the watchers at the quintain, speaking with a great fat septon who was sweating worse than Dunk, a round, white pudding of a man in robes as damp as if he'd worn them in his bath. Inchfield was a lance beside him, stiff and straight and very tall, though not so tall as Dunk. 6 feet and 7 inches, Dunk judged, and each inch prouder than the last. Though he wore black silk and cloth of silver, Sir Lucas looked as cool as if he were walking on the wall. "My lord," the guard hailed him, "this one come from the Chicken Tower for an audience with her ladyship." The septon turned first with a hoot of delight that made Dunk wonder if he were drunk.
"And what is this? A hedge knight? You have large hedges in the reach."
The septon made a sign of blessing.
"May the warrior fight ever at your side. I am Septon Sefton, an unfortunate name but mine own. And you?"
"Sir Duncan, the tall."
"A modest fellow, this one," the septon said to Sir Lucas. "Were I as large as him, I'd call myself Sir Sefton the Immense, Sir Sefton the Tower, Sir Sefton with the clouds about his ears."
His moon face was flushed, and there were wine stains on his robe. Sir Lucas studied Dunk. He was an older man, 40 at the least, perhaps as old as 50, sinewy rather than muscular, with a remarkably ugly face. His lips were thick, his teeth a yellow tangle, his nose broad and fleshy, his eyes protruding. And he is angry, Dunk sensed, even before the man said, "Hedge knights are beggars with blades at best, outlaws at worst. Begone with you. We want none of your sort here." Dunk's face darkened.
"Sir Eustace Osgrave sent me from Standfast to treat with the lady of the castle." "Osgray?"
The septon glanced at the Longinch.
"Osgray of the Checky Lion? I thought House Osgray was extinguished."
"Near enough, as makes no matter. The old man is the last of them. We let him keep a crumbling tower house a few leagues east."
Sir Lucas frowned at Dunk.
"If Sir Eustace wants to talk with her ladyship, let him come himself."
His eyes narrowed.
"You were the one with Bennis at the dam. Don't trouble to deny it. I ought to hang you."
"Seven save us!"
The septon dabbed sweat from his brow with his sleeve.
"A brigand, is he? And a big one? Sir, repent your evil ways, and the mother will have mercy."
The septon's pious plea was undercut when he farted.
"Oh, dear, forgive my wind, sir. That's what comes of beans and barley bread."
"I am not a brigand," Dunk told the two of them, with all the dignity that he could muster. The Longinch was unmoved by the denial.
"Do not presume upon my patience, sir, if you are, sir. Run back to your Chicken Tower and tell Sir Eustace to deliver up Sir Bennis Brownstench. If he spares us the trouble of winkling him out of Standfast, her ladyship may be more inclined to clemency."
"I will speak with her ladyship about Sir Bennis and the trouble at the dam, and about the stealing of our water, too."
"Stealing?" said Sir Lucas. "Say that to our lady, and you'll be swimming in a sack before the sun has set. Are you quite certain that you wish to see her?"
The only thing that Dunk was certain of was that he wanted to drive his fist through Lucas Inchfield's crooked yellow teeth.
"I've told you what I want." "Oh, let him speak with her," the septon urged. "What harm could it do? Sir Duncan has had a long ride beneath this beastly sun. Let the fellow have his say."
Sir Lucas studied Dunk again.
"Our septon is a godly man. Come, I will thank you to be brief."
He strode across the yard, and Dunk was forced to hurry after him. The doors of the castle sept had opened, and worshippers were streaming down the steps. There were knights and squires, a dozen children, several old men, 3 septors in white robes and hoods, and 1 soft, fleshy lady of high birth, garbed in a gown of dark blue damask, trimmed with mirish lace, so long its hems were trailing in the dirt. Dunk judged her to be 40. Beneath a spun silver net, her auburn hair was piled high, but the reddest thing about her was her face. "My lady," Sir Lucas said, when they stood before her and her scepters, "this hedge knight claims to bring a message from Sir Eustace Oscray. Will you hear it?"
"If you wish it, Sir Lucas."
She peered at Dunk so hard that he could not help but recall Egg's talk of sorcery. "I don't think this one bathes in blood to keep her beauty." The widow was stout and square, with an oddly pointed head that her hair could not quite conceal. Her nose was too big and her mouth too small. She did have two eyes, he was relieved to see, but all thought of gallantry had abandoned Dunk by then. "Sir Eustace, bid me talk with you concerning the recent trouble at your dam." She blinked.
"The dam, you say?"
A crowd was gathering about them. Dunk could feel unfriendly eyes upon him. "The stream," he said, "the Checky water. Your ladyship built a dam across it."
"Oh, I am quite sure I haven't," she replied. "Why, I have been at my devotions all morning, sir."
Dunk heard Sir Lucas chuckle. "I did not mean to say that your ladyship built the dam herself, only that without that water, all our crops will die. The small folk have beans and barley in the fields, and melons."
"Truly, I am very fond of melons."
Her small mouth made a happy bow.
"What sort of melons are they?"
Dunk glanced uneasily at the ring of faces and felt his own face growing hot. "Something is amiss here. The long inch is playing me for a fool. M'lady, could we continue our discussion in some more private place?"
"A silver says the great oath means to better,"
someone japed, and a roar of laughter went up all around him. The lady cringed away, half in terror, and raised both hands to shield her face. One of the scepters moved quickly to her side and put a protective arm around her shoulders.
"And what is all this merriment?"
The voice cut through the laughter, cool and firm.
"Will no one share the jape? Sir Knight, why are you troubling my good sister?"
It was the girl he had seen earlier at the archery butts. She had a quiver of arrows on one hip, and held a long bow that was just as tall as she was, which wasn't very tall. If Dunk was shy an inch of 7 feet, the archer was shy an inch of 5. He could have spanned her waist with his 2 hands. Her red hair was bound up in a braid so long it brushed past her thighs, and she had a dimpled chin, a snub nose, and a light spray of freckles across her cheeks.
"Forgive us, Lady Rohan."
The speaker was a pretty young lord with the Caswell centaur embroidered on his doublet.
"This great oaf took the Lady Hellicent for you."
Dunk looked from one lady to the other.
"You are the Red Widow?" he heard himself blurt out.
"But you're too young?"
The girl tossed her longbow to the lanky lad he'd seen her shooting with.
"I am 25, as it happens."
"Or was it small, you meant to say?"
"Pretty. It was pretty." Dunk did not know where that came from, but he was glad it came. He liked her nose, and the strawberry blonde colour of her hair, and the small but well-shaped breasts beneath her leather jerkin.
"I thought that you'd be... I mean, they said you were 4 times a widow, so..."
"My first husband died when I was 10. He was 12, my father's squire, ridden down upon the red grass field. My husband seldom linger long, I fear. The last died in the spring."
That was what they always said of those who had perished during the great spring sickness 2 years past. He died in the spring. Many tens of thousands had died in the spring, among them a wise old king and 2 young princes full of promise.
I am sorry for all your losses, m'lady. A gallantry, you lunk. Give her a gallantry. I want to say, your gown...
Gown? She glanced down at her boots and breeches, loose linen tunic and leather jerkin.
I wear no gown.
Your hair, I meant. It's soft and...
And how would you know that, sir? If you had ever touched my hair, I should think that I might remember.
Not soft, Dunk said miserably. Red, I meant to say. Your hair is very red.
Very red, sir? Oh, not as red as your face, I hope.
She laughed, and the onlookers laughed with her. All but Sir Lucas Longinch.
My lady,
he broke in. "This man is one of Standfast's sellswords. He was with Bennis of the Brown Shield when he attacked your diggers at the dam and carved up Walmer's face. Old Osgray sent him to treat with you."
"He did, m'lady. I am called Sir Duncan the Tall."
"Sir Duncan the Dim, more like," said a bearded knight who wore the threefold thunderbolt of Laygood. More guffaws sounded. Even Lady Hellicent had recovered herself enough to give a chuckle. "Did the courtesy of Coldmoat die with my lord father?" the girl asked.
"No, not a girl, a woman grown.
How did Sir Duncan come to make such an error, I wonder?"
Dunk gave Inchfield an evil look. "The fault was mine."
"Was it?" The Red Widow looked Dunk over from his heels up to his head, though her gaze lingered longest on his chest. "A tree and shooting star. I have never seen those arms before." She touched his tunic, tracing a limb of his elm tree with two fingers. "And painted, not sewn. The Dornish paint their silks, I've heard, but you look too big to be a Dornishman."
"Not all Dornishmen are small, m'lady."
Dunk could feel her fingers through the silk. Her hand was freckled, too.
"I'll bet she's freckled all over."
His mouth was oddly dry. "I spent a year in Dorn." "Do all the oaks grow so tall there?" she said, as her fingers traced a tree limb around his heart.
"It's meant to be an elm, m'lady."
"I shall remember." She drew her hand back, solemn. "The ward is too hot and dusty for a conversation. Septon, show Sir Duncan to my audience chamber."
"It would be my great pleasure, good sister."
"Our guest will have a thirst. You may send for a flagon of wine as well."
"Must I?" the fat man beamed. "Well, if it please you."
"I will join you as soon as I have changed." Unhooking her belt and quiver, she handed them to her companion. "I'll want Maester Serric as well. Sir Lucas, go ask him to attend me."
"I will bring him at once, my lady," said Lucas the Longinch.
The look she gave her castellan was cool. "No need. I know you have many duties to perform about the castle. It will suffice if you send Maester Serric to my chambers."
"M'lady," Dunk called after her, "my squire was made to wait by the gates. Might he join us as well?"
"Your squire?" When she smiled, she looked a girl of 5 and 10, not a woman 5 and 20. A pretty girl, full of mischief and laughter.
"If it please you,
certainly."
"Don't drink the wine, sir,"
Egg whispered to him as they waited with the Septon in her audience chamber. The stone floors were covered with sweet-smelling rushes, the walls hung with tapestries of tourney scenes and battles. Doug snorted.
"She has no need to poison me," he whispered back. "She thinks I'm some great lout with pease porridge between his ears, you mean." "As it happens, my good sister likes pease porridge," said Septon Sefton, as he reappeared with a flagon of wine, a flagon of water, and 3 cups. "Yes, yes, I heard. I'm fat, not deaf."
He filled 2 cups with wine and 1 with water. The 3rd he gave to Egg, who gave it a long, dubious look and put it aside. The Septon took no notice.
"This is an Arbor vintage," he was telling Dunk. "Very fine, and the poison gives it a special piquance."
He winked at Egg.
"I seldom touch the grape myself, but I have heard."
He handed Dunk a cup. The wine was lush and sweet, but Dunk sipped it gingerly, and only after the Septon had quaffed down half of his in 3 big, lip-smacking gulps. Egg crossed his arms and continued to ignore his water.
"She does like pease porridge," the Septon said, "and you as well, sir. I know my own good sister. When I first saw you in the yard, I half hoped you were some suitor, come from King's Landing to seek my lady's hand."
Dunk furrowed his brow. "How did you know I was from King's Landing, Septon?"
"Kingslanders have a certain way of speaking."
The Septon took a gulp of wine, sloshed it about his mouth, swallowed, and sighed with pleasure.
"I have served there many years, attending our High Septon in the great Sept of Baylor," he sighed. "You would not know the city since the spring. The fires changed it. A quarter of the house is gone, and another quarter empty. The rats are gone as well. That is the queerest thing. I never thought to see a city without rats."
Dunk had heard that too.
"Were you there during the great spring sickness?"
"Oh, indeed.
A dreadful time, sir, dreadful. Strong men would wake healthy at the break of day and be dead by evenfall. So many died so quickly there was no time to bury them. They piled them in the dragon pit instead, and when the corpses were 10 feet deep, Lord Rivers commanded the pyromancers to burn them. The light of the fires shone through the windows, as it did of yore when living dragons still nested beneath the dome. By night you could see the glow all through the city, the dark, green glow of wildfire. The color green still haunts me to this day. They say the spring was bad in Lannisport and worse in Old Town, but in King's Landing it cut down 4 of 10. Neither young nor old were spared, nor rich nor poor, nor great nor humble. Our good High Septon was taken, the God's own voice on earth, with a third of the most devout and nearly all our silent sisters. His Grace King Darren, sweet Mataris, and bold Velar the Hand, oh, it was a dreadful time. By the end, half the city was praying to the stranger. He had another drink. And where were you, sir?
In Dorne, said Dunk.
Thank the mother for her mercy, then?
The great spring sickness had never come to Dorne, perhaps because the Dornish had closed their borders and their ports, as had the Aerins of the Vale, who had also been spared.
All this talk of death is enough to put a man off wine, but cheer is hard to come by in such times as we are living. The drought endures for all our prayers. The King's Wood is one great tinderbox, and fires rage there night and day. Bitter Steel and the Sons of Daemon Blackfire are hatching plots in Tyrosh, and Dagon Greyjoy's Krakens prowl the sunset sea like wolves, raiding as far south as the Arbor. They carried off half the wealth of Fair Isle, it's said, and 100 women, too. Lord Farman is repairing his defences, though that strikes me as akin to the man who claps his pregnant daughter in a chastity belt when her belly's big as mine. Lord Bracken is dying slowly on the Trident, and his eldest son perished in the spring. That means Sir Otho must succeed. The Blackwoods will never stomach the brute of Bracken as a neighbour. It will mean war.
Dunk knew about the ancient enmity between the Blackwoods and the Brackens. Won't their liege lord force a peace?
Alas, said Septon Sefton. Lord Tully is a boy of 8, surrounded by women. River Run will do little, and King Aerys will do less. Unless some maester writes a book about it, the whole matter may escape his royal notice. Lord Rivers is not like to let any Brackens in to see him. Pray recall, our Hand was born half Blackwood. If he acts at all, it will be only to help his cousins bring the brute to bay. The mother marked Lord Rivers on the day that he was born, and Bittersteel marked him once again upon the red grass field.
Dunk knew he meant Bloodraven. Brynden Rivers was the Hand's true name. His mother had been a Blackwood, his father King Aegon IV. The fat man drank his wine and rattled on.
As for Aerys, his grace cares more for old scrolls and dusty prophecies than for lords and laws. He will not even bestir himself to sire an heir. Queen Eleanor prays daily at the great sept, beseeching the mother above to bless her with a child, yet she remains a maid. Aerys keeps his own apartments, and it is said that he would sooner take a book to bed than any woman.
He filled his cup again.
Make no mistake. 'Tis Lord Rivers who rules us with his spells and spies. There is no one to oppose him. Prince Maekar sulks at Summer Hall, nursing his grievances against his royal brother. Prince Rhaegal is as meek as he is mad, and his children are, well, children. Friends and favourites of Lord Rivers fill every office. The lords of the small council lick his hand, and this new grand maester is as steeped in sorcery as he is. The Red Keep is garrisoned by raven's teeth, and no man sees the king without his leave.
Dunk shifted uncomfortably in his seat. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? 1,000 eyes and 1. He hoped the king's hand did not have 1,000 ears and 1 as well. Some of what Septon Sefton was saying sounded treasonous. He glanced at Egg to see how he was taking all of this. The boy was struggling with all his might to hold his tongue. The Septon pushed himself to his feet.
My good sister will be a while yet. As with all great ladies, the first 10 gowns she tries will be found not to suit her mood. Will you take more wine?
Without waiting for an answer, he refilled both cups. The lady I mistook, said Dunk, anxious to speak of something else, is she your sister?
We are all children of the Seven, sir, but apart from that, dear me, no. Lady Hellicent was sister to Sir Roland Uffering, Lady Rohan's fourth husband, who died in the spring. My brother was his predecessor, Sir Simon Staunton, who had the great misfortune to choke upon a chicken bone. Coldmoat crawls with revenants, it must be said. The husbands die, yet their kin remain, to drink my lady's wines and eat her sweetmeats like a plague of plump pink locusts done up in silk and velvet. He wiped his mouth. And yet, she must wed again, and soon.
Must, said Dunk.
Her lord father's will demands it. Lord Wyman wanted grandsons to carry on his line. When he sickened, he tried to wed her to the Long Inch, so he might die knowing that she had a strong man to protect her, but Rohan refused to have him. His lordship took his vengeance in his will. If she remains unwed on the second anniversary of her father's passing, Coldmoat and its lands pass to his cousin Wendell. Perhaps you glimpsed him in the yard, a short man with a goitre on his neck, much given to flatulence. Though it is small of me to say so. I am cursed with excess wind myself. Be that as it may, Sir Wendell is grasping and stupid, but his lady wife is Lord Rowan's sister, and damnably fertile. That cannot be denied. She whelps as often as he farts. Their sons are quite as bad as he is, their daughters worse, and all of them have begun to count the days. Lord Rowan has upheld the will, so her ladyship has only till the next new moon.
Why has she waited so long? Dunk wondered aloud.
The Septon shrugged. If truth be told, there has been a dearth of suitors. My good sister is not hard to look upon, you will have noticed, and a stout castle and broad lands add to her charms. You would think that younger sons and landless knights would swarm about her ladyship like flies. You would be wrong. The four dead husbands make them wary, and there are those who will say that she is barren, too, though never in her hearing, unless they yearn to see the inside of a crow cage. She has carried two children to term, a boy and a girl, but neither lived to see a name day. Those few who are not put off by talk of poisonings and sorcery want no part of the Long Inch. Lord Wyman charged him on his deathbed to protect his daughter from unworthy suitors, which he has taken to mean all suitors. Any man who means to have her hand would need to face his sword first.
He finished his wine and set the cup aside.
That is not to say there has been no one. Clayton Caswell and Simon Laygood have been the most persistent, though they seem more interested in her lands than in her person. Were I given to wagering, I should place my gold on Gerald Lannister. He has yet to put in an appearance, but they say he is golden-haired and quick of wit, and more than 6 feet tall.
And Lady Webber is much taken with his letters. The lady in question stood in the doorway beside a homely young maester with a great hooked nose.
You would lose your wager, good brother. Gerald will never willingly forsake the pleasures of Lannisport and the splendour of Casterly Rock for some little lordship.
He has more influence as Lord Tybalt's brother and adviser than he could ever hope for as my husband. As for the others, Sir Simon would need to sell off half my land to pay his debts, and Sir Clayton trembles like a leaf whenever the Long Inch deigns to look his way. Besides, he is prettier than I am. And you, Septon, have the biggest mouth in Westeros.
A large belly requires a large mouth, said Septon Sefton, utterly unabashed. Else it soon becomes a small one.
Are you the Red Widow? Egg asked, astonished.
I'm near as tall as you are.
Another boy made that same observation not half a year ago. I sent him to the rack to make him taller. When Lady Rohan settled onto the high seat on the dais, she pulled her braid forward over her left shoulder. It was so long that the end of it lay coiled in her lap like a sleeping cat. Sir Duncan, I should not have teased you in the yard when you were trying so hard to be gracious. It was only that you blushed so red. Was there no girl to tease you in the village where you grew so tall?
The village was King's Landing.
He did not mention Flea Bottom. There were girls, but the sort of teasing that went on in Flea Bottom sometimes involved cutting off a toe.
I expect they were afraid to tease you.
Lady Rohan stroked her braid. No doubt they were frightened of your size.
Do not think ill of Lady Hellicent, I pray you. My good sister is a simple creature, but she has no harm in her. For all her piety, she could not dress herself without her scepters.
It was not her doing. The mistake was mine.
You lie most gallantly. I know it was Sir Lucas. He is a man of cruel humours, and you offended him on sight.
How? Dunk said, puzzled. I never did him any harm.
She smiled a smile that made him wish she were plainer. I saw you standing with him. You're taller, by a hand, or near enough. It has been a long while since Sir Lucas met anyone he could not look down on. How old are you, sir?
Near 20, if it please, m'lady.
Dunk liked the ring of 20, though most like he was a year younger, maybe 2. No one knew for certain, least of all him. He must have had a mother and a father like everybody else, but he'd never known them, not even their names, and no one in Flea Bottom had ever cared much when he'd been born, or to whom. Are you as strong as you appear?
How strong do I appear, m'lady?
Oh, strong enough to annoy Sir Lucas. He is my castellan, though not by choice. Like Cold Moat, he is a legacy of my father. Did you come to knighthood on some battlefield, Sir Duncan? Your speech suggests that you were not born of noble blood, if you will forgive my saying so.
I was born of gutter blood.
A hedge knight named Sir Arlan of Pennytree took me on to squire for him when I was just a boy. He taught me chivalry and the arts of war.
And this same Sir Arlan knighted you?
Dunk shuffled his feet. One of his boots was half unlaced, he saw. No one else was like to do it.
Where is Sir Arlan now?
He died.
He raised his eyes. He could lace his boot up later.
I buried him on a hillside.
Did he fall valiantly in battle?
There were rains. He caught a chill.
Old men are frail, I know. I learned that from my second husband. I was 13 when we wed. He would have been 55 on his next name day had he lived long enough to see it. When he was half a year in the ground, I gave him a little son. But the stranger came for him as well. The Septons said his father wanted him beside him.
What do you think, sir?
Well, Dunk said hesitantly,
that might be, m'lady.
Nonsense, she said. The boy was born too weak. Such a tiny thing. He scarce had strength enough to nurse.
Still,
the gods gave his father 55 years. You would think they might have granted more than 3 days to the son.
You would.
Dunk knew little and less about the gods. He went to Sept sometimes and prayed to the warrior to lend strength to his arms, but elsewise he let the 7 be. "I am sorry your Sir Arlan died," she said, "and sorrier still that you took service with Sir Eustace. All old men are not the same, Sir Duncan. You would do well to go home to Pennytree."
"I have no home but where I swear by sword."
Dunk had never seen Pennytree. He couldn't even say if it was in the reach.
"Swear it here, then. The times are uncertain.
I have need of knights. You look as though you have a healthy appetite, Sir Duncan. How many chickens can you eat? At Cold Moat you would have your fill of warm pink meat and sweet fruit tarts. Your squire looks in need of sustenance as well. He is so scrawny that all his hair has fallen out. We'll have him share a cell with other boys of his own age. He'll like that. My master-at-arms can train him in all the arts of war."
"I train him," said Dunk defensively.
"And who else? Bennis? Old Osgray? The chickens?"
There had been days when Dunk had set egg to chasing chickens. It helps make him quicker, he thought, but he knew that if he said it, she would laugh. She was distracting him with her snub nose and her freckles. Dunk had to remind himself of why Sir Eustace had sent him here.
"My sword is sworn to my Lord of Osgray, m'lady," he said, "and that's the way it is."
"So be it, sir. Let us speak of less pleasant matters." Lady Rohan gave her braid a tug. "We do not suffer attacks on Cold Moat or its people. So tell me why I should not have you sewn in a sack."
"I came to parley," he reminded her, "and I have drunk your wine." The taste still lingered in his mouth, rich and sweet. So far, it had not poisoned him. Perhaps it was the wine that made him bold.
"And you don't have a sack big enough for me."
To his relief, Egg's jape made her smile. "I have several that are big enough for Bennis, though. Maester Serric says Walmer's face was sliced open almost to the bone."
"Sir Bennis lost his temper with the man, m'lady. Sir Eustace sent me here to pay the blood price."
"The blood price," she laughed. "He is an old man, I know, but I had not realized he was so old as that. Does he think we are living in the age of heroes, when a man's life was reckoned to be worth no more than a sack of silver?"
"The digger was not killed, m'lady," Dunk reminded her. "No one was killed that I saw. His face was cut, is all."
Her fingers danced idly along her braid. "How much does Sir Eustace reckon Walmer's cheek to be worth, pray?"
"One silver stag, and three for you, my lady."
"Sir Eustace sets a niggard's price upon my honour, though three silvers are better than three chickens, I grant you. He would do better to deliver Bennis up to me for chastisement."
"Would this involve that sack you mentioned?"
"It might." She coiled her braid around one hand. "Osgray can keep his silver. Only blood can pay for blood."
"Well," said Dunk, "it may be as you say, m'lady, but why not send for that man that Bennis cut, and ask him if he'd sooner have a silver stag or Bennis in a sack?"
"Oh, he'd pick the silver if he couldn't have both. I don't doubt that, sir. It is not his choice to make. This is about the lion and the spider now, not some peasant's cheek. It is Bennis I want. And Bennis I shall have. No one rides onto my lands, does harm to one of mine, and escapes to laugh about it."
"Your ladyship rode onto Standfast land and did harm of one of Sir Eustace's," Dunk said, before he stopped to think about it.
"Did I?" She tugged her braid again. "If you mean the sheep-stealer, the man was notorious. I had twice complained to Osgray, yet he did nothing. I do not ask thrice. The king's law grants me the power of pit and gallows."
It was Egg who answered her.
"On your own lands?" the boy insisted. "The king's law gives lords the power of pit and gallows on their own lands." "Clever boy," she said. "If you know that much, you will also know that landed knights have no right to punish without their liege lord's leave. Sir Eustace holds Standfast of Lord Rowan. Bennis broke the king's peace when he drew blood and must answer for it." She looked Dunk. "If Sir Eustace will deliver Bennis to me, I'll slit his nose, and that will be the end of it. If I must come and take him, I make no such promise."
Dunk had a sudden sick feeling in the pit of his stomach. "I will tell him, but he won't give up Sir Bennis." He hesitated. "The dam was the cause of all the trouble. If your ladyship would consent to take it down..."
"Impossible," declared the young maester by Lady Wilhand's side. "Coldmoat supports 20 times as many small folk as does Standfast. Her ladyship has fields of wheat and corn and barley, all dying from the drought. She has half a dozen orchards, apples and apricots, and three kinds of pears. She has cows about to calf, 500 head of black-nosed sheep, and she breeds the finest horses in the reach. We have a dozen mares about to foal."
"Sir Eustace has sheep too," Dunk said. "He has melons in the fields, beans and barley corn, and..."
"You were taking water for the moat,"
Egg said loudly. "I was getting to the moat," Dunk thought.
"The moat is essential to Coldmoat's defences," the maester insisted. "Do you suggest that Lady Rohan leave herself open to attack in such uncertain times as these?"
"Well," Dunk said slowly, "a dry moat is still a moat, and the lady has strong walls with ample men to defend them."
"Sir Duncan," Lady Rohan said,
"I was 10 years old when the Black Dragon rose. I begged my father not to put himself at risk, or at least to leave my husband. Who would protect me if both my men were gone? So he took me up onto the ramparts and pointed out Coldmoat's strong points. 'Keep them strong,' he said, 'and they will keep you safe. If you see to your defences, no man may do you harm.' The first thing he pointed at was the moat." She stroked her cheek with the tail of her braid. "My first husband perished on the red grass field. My father found me others, but the stranger took them too. I no longer trust in men, no matter how ample they may seem. I trust in stone and steel and water. I trust in moats, sir, and mine will not go dry."
"What your father said, that's well and good," said Dunk, "but it doesn't give you the right to take Osgray water."
She tugged her braid. "I suppose Sir Eustace told you that the stream was his?"
"For 1,000 years," said Dunk. "It's named the Checky Water. That's plain."
"So it is." She tugged again, once, twice, thrice.
"As the river is called the Mander, though the Manderleys were driven from its banks 1,000 years ago. High Garden is still High Garden, though the last gardener died on the field of fire. Casterly Rock teems with Lannisters, and nowhere a Casterly to be found. The world changes, sir. This checky water rises in the Horseshoe Hills, which were wholly mine when last I looked. The water is mine as well. Maester Serric, show him. The maester descended from the dais. He could not have been much older than Dunk, but in his grey robes and chain collar he had an air of sombre wisdom that belied his years. In his hands was an old parchment. "See for yourself, sir," he said as he unrolled it and offered it to Dunk. Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall. He felt his cheeks reddening again. Gingerly he took parchment from the maester and scowled at the writing. Not a word of it was intelligible to him, but he knew the wax seal beneath the ornate signature, the three-headed dragon of House Targaryen, the king's seal. He was looking at a royal decree of some sort. Dunk moved his head from side to side, so they would think he was reading. "There's a word here I can't make out," he muttered after a moment. "Egg, come have a look. You have sharper eyes than me." The boy darted to his side. "Which word, sir?" Dunk pointed. "That one?" "Oh." Egg read quickly, then raised his eyes to Dunk's and gave a little nod. "It is her stream. She has a paper." Dunk felt as though he'd been punched in the stomach. The king's own seal. There must be some mistake. The old man's sons died in service to the king. Why would his grace take his stream away? If King Darren had been a less forgiving man, he should have lost his head as well. For half a heartbeat, Dunk was lost. "What do you mean?" "She means," said Maester Serric, "that Sir Eustace Osgray is a rebel and a traitor. Sir Eustace chose the black dragon over the red in the hope that a Blackfyre king might restore the lands and castles that the Osgrays had lost under the Targaryens," Lady Rohan said. "Chiefly, he wanted Coldmoat. His sons paid for his treason with their life's blood. When he brought their bones home and delivered his daughter to the king's men for a hostage, his wife threw herself from the top of Standfast Tower. Did Sir Eustace tell you that?" Her smile was sad. "No, I did not think so." "The Black Dragon. You swore your sword to a traitor, Lunk. You ate a traitor's bread and slept beneath a rebel's roof." "M'lady," he said, groping, "the Black Dragon? That was 15 years ago. This is now, and there's a drought. Even if he was a rebel once, Sir Eustace still needs water." The Red Widow rose and smoothed her skirts. "He had best pray for rain, then." That was when Dunk recalled Osgray's parting words in the wood. "If he will not grant him a share of the water for his own sake, do it for his son." "His son?" "Adam. He served here as your father's page and squire." Lady Rohan's face was stone. "Come closer." He did not know what else to do but to obey. The dais added a good foot to her height, yet even so Dunk towered over her. "Kneel," she said. He did. The slap she gave him had all her strength behind it, and she was stronger than she looked. His cheek burned, and he could taste blood in his mouth from a broken lip, but she hadn't truly hurt him. For a moment, all Dunk could think of was grabbing her by that long red braid and pulling her across his lap to slap her ass, as you would a spoiled child. "If I do, she'll scream, though, and 20 knights will come bursting in to kill me." "You dare appeal to me in Adam's name?" Her nostrils flared. "Remove yourself from Coldmoat, sir, at once." "I never meant—" "Go! Or I will find a sack large enough for you, if I have to sew one up myself. Tell Sir Eustace to bring me Bennis of the Brown Shield by the morrow, else I will come for him myself with fire and sword. Do you understand me? Fire and sword!" Septon Sefton took Dunk's arm and pulled him quickly from the room. Egg followed close behind them.
"That was most unwise, sir," the fat Septon whispered, and he led them to the steps. "Most unwise. To mention Adam Osgray.
Sir Eustace told me she was fond of the boy."
"Fond?"
The Septon huffed heavily.
"She loved the boy, and him her. It never went beyond a kiss or two, but it was Adam she wept for after the red grass field, not the husband she hardly knew. She blames Sir Eustace for his death, and rightly so. The boy was 12.
Dunk knew what it was to bear a wound. Whenever someone spoke of Ashford Meadow, he thought of the 3 good men who died to save his foot, and never failed to hurt.
tell my lady that it was not my wish to hurt her. Beg her pardon? I shall do all I can, sir, Septon said. But tell Sir Eustace to bring her Bennis, and quickly. Elsewise it will go hard on him. It will go very hard.
Not until the walls and towers of Coldmoat had vanished in the west behind them did Dunk turn to Egg and say,
What words were written on that paper?
It was a grant of right, sir, to Lord Wyman Webber from the king. For his leal service in the late rebellion, Lord Wyman and his descendants were granted all rights to the Checky Water from where it rises in the Horseshoe Hills to the shores of Leafy Lake. It also said that Lord Wyman and his descendants should have the right to take red deer and boar and rabbits in Watts Wood whene'er it pleased them, and to cut 20 trees from the wood each year. The boy cleared his throat. The grant was only for a time, though. The paper said that if Sir Eustace were to die without a male heir of his body, Standfast would revert to the crown, and Lord Webber's privileges would end. They were the marshals of the North March for 1,000 years.
All they left the old man was a tower to die in.
And his head, said Egg. His grace did leave him his head, sir, even though he was a rebel. Dunk gave the boy a look.
Would you have taken it?
Egg had to think about it.
Sometimes at court I would serve the king's small council. They used to fight about it. Uncle Baylor said that clemency was best when dealing with an honorable foe. If a defeated man believes he will be pardoned, he may lay down his sword and bend the knee. Elsewise he will fight on to the death, and slay more loyal men and innocents. But Lord Bloodraven said that when you pardon rebels, you only plant the seeds of the next rebellion. His voice was full of doubts.
Why would Sir Eustace rise against King Darren? He was a good king, everybody says so. He brought Dawn into the realm and made the Dornishmen our friends.
He would have to ask Sir Eustace, Egg.
Dunk thought he knew the answer, but it was not one the boy would want to hear. He wanted a castle with a lion on the gatehouse, but all he got were graves among the blackberries. When you swore a man your sword, you promised to serve and obey, to fight for him at need, not to pry into his affairs and question his allegiances. But Sir Eustace had played him for a fool. He said his sons died fighting for the king, and let me believe the stream was his.